Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with the calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk about the value of culture on your longevity code. How does culture fit in? Does it make you live longer?
Interesting.
And we're going to talk about cancer screening specifically, prostate cancer screening, and the tremendous hullabaloo that has surrounded it from both the U.S. Department of Health that's looked at it and the urologists.
Mm-hmm. And what's our recipe?
Steve's famous pancakes. I love pancakes. Do I eat them often? No. But whenever I eat pancakes, they make me happy, and I love to be happy.
We'll be on the phone with Oak Ridge, Tennessee listener Steve Kelly coming up in just a bit. And now, Zorba, let's welcome our first caller, a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I'm 21 now, and I was 13 years old. I fell off my bicycle and had a pretty bad injury to my knee. I went to the doctor, and he told me that I had a partial tear on my PCL ligament. Mm-hmm. At that point, he told me that I should go through some physical therapy, and that, you know, that should be the best route of action for it. And then went through the physical therapy without a problem. Here I am. You know, 7-8 years later, I'm 21 and still having knee pain. It went away for quite a few years, and I'm just now noticing it coming back. Kind of wonder what would be the best route of action now to try and get this resolved.
Well, it went away for some time. It's obvious to you, though, that this is related to that earlier accident?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same pain that I remember when I was younger. It's real deep inside, like, the middle of my knee.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And it's more like almost like an arthritis-y pain and not so much of a,
you know. Yeah, it's right sort of inside. Let's talk about a few things. First of all, what brings on the pain? When do you get your pain?
I've noticed it mostly last weekend that I had a big garage sale, which was full of moving, walking around, and lifting stuff. So, you know, just using it in excess of what I would on a normal day is what normally would cause the pain.
Okay, so excess use. How about riding a bicycle?
Riding a bicycle never seemed to cause too much of an issue.
Okay, good. By the way, when you ride a bike, you're often actually not putting a lot of stress on your knee. When you're lifting heavy objects and you're moving them from place to place, hoping to sell them, then that puts more stress. Doctor obviously took some X-rays. There was no break in the bone itself when it was there because it doesn't sound like it. What are you doing for exercise? You know, right now for that knee.
Typically, I do ride my bike, and I walk everywhere I go.
Uh-huh. Does it bother you walking?
I don't own a car, so that's how I get around.
Does it bother you walking? You don't own a car.
Huh. No, I don't. It's my attempt to be better for the environment.
Oh, great for you. Yeah, it does make a difference. So getting back, when you're walking, does it bother you when you're walking?
Excessive walking, yeah. But you know, like walking up to the store back never seemed to be a problem. But if I walk, you know, in excess of a mile or two, it does start to be an issue.
Okay. I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, you know, you don't want to take an anti-inflammatory drug forever. I mean, you know, you're 21, mm-hmm. and you're on it, you're not going to take it for 60 or 70 years. You've got a long life ahead of you. But on the days, this is right now while you're rehabbing, on the days where you know you're going to have trouble, I would drop 2 Aleve tablets in the morning, 2 Aleve tablets in the evening, 2 Aleve twice a day. Automatically, you go, hey, I'm going to have a garage sale. I'm going to take a leave the morning of the garage sale. I'm going to take it at the end of the day in the garage sale. I'm going to get rid of the pain and inflammation. You know, if you're going to go out and play Ultimate Frisbee or something else, same thing.
Right.
You know, no matter what you're going to do, you want to just do that. I think what you want to do is you need to go at some point to a physical therapist or a trainer who can look at that knee and tell you which ligament needs to be stretched and worked on. I think you've got some ligamentous injury. It doesn't sound, you know, you don't have a bony injury, and it's not going to, you know, it's something that would have cropped up at that time, would have seen on X-ray if you had an X-ray done. An X-ray only shows you the bony problems, but the ligaments and the muscles need to be stretched in some way. And I am a great believer in physical therapy and a great believer in the fact that they can do a great evaluation and say, this is the ligament, this is the angle you have to stretch it at, and that's what you need. You know, it's it's very similar to back pain. When people have back pain or if they have a psoas muscle injury or a sacroiliac injury, once you figure out what stretching exercises to do, you can often get rid of it because something is awry and it's probably ligamentous. So do you have health insurance or not?
I do.
You do. Then you need PT. And you need to have a sort of a prescription from your doctor or primary care doctor. But that's what I would do. I would go to PT and I think most people have to go to more than one session. I've discovered that when I go to PT, I'll remember at least half of what they told me. You know, so you got to go that second time and sometimes even a third time because I've discovered I am really dumb at remembering that like everyone else. If I go and see my doctor, it'll be like, what did he say? You know, and I know what I'm doing. So I always believe two visits, maybe three, will make a difference. And then rehab it. And you may have to do exercises every morning, but it's not the end of the road. You just need an eval, and your doc is not the one to do the eval. Orthopedic surgeon is not the one to do the eval. It's the physical therapist.
I understand.
Yeah, pretty good, not having a car, riding a bike and walking. You're in Jacksonville, Florida. Do you think if you lived in Madison, Wisconsin, with winters of, you know, 15 below and snow up to here, you'd be without a car?
I'd probably have a car with a great heater at that point.
Thanks a lot for the call.
You guys have a good one.
You too. 800-462-7413.
Here he is. Big honesty. Big on the green when you're walking in hot weather. Exactly.
1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Well, I was calling about my son, who will be two very soon, and he is dealing with eczema. And he has had it since he was about 6 months old. It manifests mostly behind his knees and at his wrists, sometimes at his elbows, the creases of his arms. We've tried a lot of different things. We've been to an allergist, and we've run panels, and we've tried food elimination, and nothing seems to really help. We think it might be environmental allergy-based. We've tried steroid creams, we've tried antihistamines, and I'm just sort of wanting to develop a good plan about what's the best course of action the least amount of side effects for him in the future.
How old is he now?
He's almost two.
So he's almost 2 years of age, right? Yeah. Yeah. Is he bothered by it, by the way?
He is. We have a lot of itching and scratching and trying to control him, you know, from doing that.
Oh, sure. How many docs have you seen?
I've been to an pediatrician, to an allergist, and she actually recommended a dermatologist, which I don't know if that person would be able to give us more insight either.
So you went to two docs, and they give you lots of different advice with that. It's tough. Did you have eczema, by the way?
I don't know.
Okay. And has he been on Protopic or just steroid creams?
Yes, a steroid cream he has,
okay,
yes.
But not Protopic, which is
not that I'm aware,
okay,
no.
Which
not.
Is another cream. You've gone to the net, and you've looked up eczema?
I have, yeah, and I've seen a lot of different suggestions, oatmeal baths.
Right.
We've tried, you know, twice a day Zyrtec, or he's on a medicine now, hydroxyzine, which I understand is kind of an older antihistamine.
That's right. It often works well.
And he has some other allergies. He came back, his panels came back for environmental allergies in cats. And,
I'll tell you what I think about those panels. I think they send them out and they find out you're allergic to everything. And then some allergists start giving shots. And sometimes I think they're money-making situations that don't have a lot of relevance. I am not disparaging all allergists on doing this, but there's some allergists who say, well, you're allergic to 10 different things, and by the way, I can sell you this, you know, these shots that'll work for you. And I'm not a great believer in shots at all. I think that they work in children who are highly allergic to certain things, and that they're worthwhile. But I think for environmental allergies on the whole, they fall into the wayside. They're not as useful. They really were never that useful. This is what they boiled down to. Okay, so let's go to what to do. I think if you've tried everything, that you actually have to go to a dermatologist who sees a lot of pediatric kids. And let me tell you how to look at that and find the right dermatologist. There are a couple of medications, one called Protopic. There are two others, I believe, in that field also, that are not steroid creams. Now, steroid creams in the short run are good. In the long run, you've read about them. They have more side effects.
Yeah.
And so if he hasn't tried Protopic, topic, which is another cream. It's something that may be useful to getting them under control. The problem is that all dermatologists are not created equal. Some are different than others. Some are interested in Botox. Some are interested in thank you, next. In other words, sometimes you don't get the proper care, and they just run people through, and there are clinics of dermatologists that just do not do a good job. And then there are the other groups of dermatologists who are very, very interested in patients and really want to spend enough time with you. So what you want to do is you want to call off, you want to, first of all, you may get a recommendation from your doctor, because your doctor, your pediatrician, your family doctor, but the pediatrician may say, I like this dermatologist. But then you want to call in the office and say, I want to get an appointment. Can I get a half an hour appointment with my child? And if they go, oh no, we only give 10 minute appointments, that's not the right office. That's the wrong office. I had a patient who went into a dermatologist. This was out in Sun Valley. She had a skin problem, which was a contact allergy. Turned out to be a nickel allergy. And the dermatologist was trying to sell her anti-wrinkle creams while she was talking to her about the nickel allergy. And I said, what did you do? And she said, I left the office. I thought, what is she doing, this dermatologist? So dermatology, I mention it because they're a different species at times, because many of them make their money on creams and ointments that they sell for cash and on Botox. So a number of them have gone not the right way in my mind. So you want to find a dermatologist that does a lot of pediatric eczema if you can. That's what you want. You want to look at a recommendation. You want to look at Protopic as a cream to stay away from the steroid creams. Okay. Kids tend to get better as they get older. Let me assure you of that. They get better as they get older. You seem to me like you're a very educated person with this, but you do need a good dermatologist here.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, we'll start there and see where we end up.
Good luck. Please let us know what's going on, what happens.
Thank you for the call. Well, 800-462-7413, it's toll free. But before our next call, some more bad news for me. Research that seems to show that cultured are happier healthier.
That's right.
Cultured men.
That's right. Article, great article out of the British Medical Journal, one of their group journals, and they looked at creative cultural activities and what they called receptive cultural activities. And I'll tell you why this is doubly bad for you. You blow the French horn, right? Oh, you have.
I have, yeah.
You have in the past. So what they wanted to look at is, this is a longitudinal study. Now, it does have limitations. It was in Norway. And we can't say that Norwegians are equal to everyone else in the world. So it has some cultural limitations. You know, these were white Anglo-Saxon Norwegians on the whole. And they looked at men who visited galleries and museums and theater and so on, and cultural activities. And they found that they were more satisfied with life, and they enjoyed better health. Now, they controlled for education. You know, you could say, wait a minute, more educated people generally have more money. Well, they controlled for that. Yeah. They controlled for smoking cigarettes. Some of them smoke. They controlled for other activities such as eating correctly and exercising. They found this was an independent factor, that if you went to a museum, you lived longer and you had a better life.
Did they have their list of what they considered to be cultural activities?
Well, it didn't include going to football games, if that's what you mean, or basketball games in your case. They didn't consider basketball. Well, are you trying to consider basketball
a
cultural activity?
Why is that not a cultural?
Well, I'm just telling you what the study was. Yeah. By the way, it was 50,000 men, a lot of men and women. Didn't seem to make a difference for women. And believe it or not, if you engaged in a cultural activity, such as blowing the French horn, it didn't seem to make a difference. Yeah. It had to be receptive cultural activities.
Observing.
So whatever... Yeah. So what do you think there is about going to a museum that makes you live longer and more satisfied with life?
What about watching television?
wait a second. You mean like PBS?
What about watching public television?
Well, you know.
Is that or is that not cultural activity?
You know what?
In your little Norwegian study.
I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about maybe you could engage in cultural activity in your house by watching public television. Now, public television may give you longevity. I think that would be a good study for public television to do, because maybe more people would then support public television.
But basketball doesn't count.
I don't think b-ball counts. I don't think football counts. I don't think. But it's interesting. I think what it shows is that.
Yeah.
I think it's once again another issue about there are other things that we do, stressors in our lives. And to me, this is kind of a marker for that.
Yeah.
If you get it together enough to go to a museum,
yeah,
that in itself may be what the issue yeah is. And when you're going to a museum, you're kind of relaxing as you're walking around. If you relax too much in a museum, yeah, you might go to sleep.
So if I go to the theater and watch have a concert going on,
yeah,
that's a cultural activity.
Yeah,
if
yeah
it's a rock band, then that's not. Or is it? Is that it?
We're not going into this anymore. This study is now closed. Next caller, please.
At 800-462-7413. This listener now, Zorba, in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, joins us. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, my wife is 48 years old. She's a vegetarian. She's not a strict vegan.
Mm-hmm.
But she is experiencing some constipation problems that are really making her fairly ill. And I just wanted to ask you about that. She is going 3, 4, 5 days without going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. I love constipation questions. I really do. I really do. They're wonderful. You know, we're, you know, Tom is smiling.
Whatever
right
floats
now
your boat. Sorry.
Oh, whatever. Oh, I love it. Whatever floats your boat. Oh, that is very creative. You know, constipation. You know, I sort of have I've always said it's a new ratio.
Yep.
You know, constipation to a 60-year-old is like sex to a 16-year-old. People think about it all the time, and it becomes a whole interesting way of life. Now, prior to this, did your wife have a regular bowel movement every day?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. She had a regular. I can just see our producer is putting his hands over the face about that. He's just thinking, what is he saying?
He's just getting prepared for all the emails he's going to get from 60 plus. Saying,
right,
what are you talking about?
That's right. Wait until he's 60. Then he'll know what. Then he'll know what we're talking about. He's laughing on the floor now, laughing out loud. But getting back to the issue at hand, so it is a problem. Now, first of all, we all have different bowel movements. Go out and get Miralax. Miralax, and it now comes in a generic. Go get it, and it is what we give when we basically give people colonoscopy. And the more you take, the looser your bowels are. It works all the time. I mean, it doesn't work all the time, but as close to all the time as you can. Much better than an enema. Nobody wants to give themselves an enema. It's disgusting, but Miralax is great. And it is not habit-forming. It is not a stimulative cathartic such as X-Lax. Don't get it confused with X-Lax at all. Now, here's number two. She has to get more fiber in her diet. An easy way to get fiber in the diet is with Metamucil, or a fiber-forming laxative, as they're called. But Metamucil is great. It's an easy way to get fiber, and she can just take a glass of Metamucil every day that she mixes up. But she may not want to do that. And if that's not the case and she doesn't want to, then she has to look at Bran and Bran products. And there are a number of other products that are like Bran that they sell in health food stores that are basically hulls, and they're not absorbed vegetarian-type products. And she has to take that every morning with milk. That's what I would recommend ultimately. You know, so ultimately, it's a fiber issue. It's fiber in the morning, fiber in the evening. You just have to put more fiber in. But that three part, I would recommend initially Miralax, and then from Miralax, go to Metamucil for a week or two to just make sure she gets nice regular bowel movements, and then she jumps over to something that is more palatable, such as a good fiber filled breakfast.
Okay. Now, if I can just quit thinking about sex all the time.
That's another call on another show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. Before we break, Zorba, let's check in on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out Kelly from Newton, Illinois. Kelly's looking for help on dealing with her family doc. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, after a lifetime of being overweight, I recently had Roux-en-Y gastric bypass surgery. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong.
You know what? You pronounce it exactly right. And kudos.
Thank you. I'm wondering how to go about determining how or if I can come off my blood pressure medicines. I test at home regularly, and my numbers are much, much better in the range of 113 over 69 since I've lost about 30 pounds. But I feel as though it's too early to come off the medicine at this point. I don't quite know how to tell when I should approach my family doctor to discuss.
Well, I would discuss it right now. You've lost 30 pounds. That may be all you need to do.
Good numbers.
Talk to your family doc. You know, usually what I do when people have a situation like that is I'll say, cut your medicine in half, come on in, get a couple of readings at our office, because I trust our office, I trust our office personnel. And if you do fine on that, then we... A lot of times we just stop the medications and watch somebody. There's usually very, very minimal risk. For some people, weight reduction cures their blood pressure. For other people, weight reduction just reduces it, but they still need to be on meds, but often less meds. Mm-hmm. So the time now is get thee to the phone and call the family doctor.
Mm-hmm. Our family doc is always approachable. Just send him a note through the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a listener recipe coming up. Looks like a good one. Lots more of your calls, of course. Some more interesting research to talk over. And, of course, our medical myth buster. Lots of great reasons to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 1-800-462-7413. We have a line open for you if you'd like to join us, a good time to call. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time, and we are happy to welcome from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, listener Steve Kelly. Steve, hi.
Hello.
Tell us about Steve's famous pancakes. Are they really famous?
Well, somewhat, yes. I have served people from various parts of the world. I've hosted a couple of groups of Russians for a pancake breakfast, and had a high school student from Santiago, one from Greenland.
Wow.
I've had a couple of kids from Japan, Germany. After 9/11, we did a fundraiser, and I served over 100 people, including the mayor, and one of my colleagues at one of my previous jobs told me, he said, one of these days, these pancakes are going to make you famous.
And you know what? They are.
Yeah.
They're making you famous. You see, the buzz got around, and that was it. All of a sudden, we have decided this is going to go viral. Steve's famous pancakes are going to be known worldwide as friendship pancakes from all over the world, international. Maybe it should be Steve's famous international pancakes. No.
That's too much like the place.
Of the recipe, there's the healthy version, which is what I sent you.
Yes.
And then there's the traditional version, which was it was actually based on an old basic mix recipe.
Ooh.
It was like homemade Bisquick.
Uh-huh.
And I pulled out the parts to make single batch sizes and started playing with the ingredients and came up with my own recipe. And then as I got older and, you know, triglycerides and cholesterol and all this other stuff, I decided I needed a more healthy version, and so I started experimenting with whole wheat flour and various other things to come up with the version that I sent you.
By the way, I think that is awesome. I think that as you get older and hopefully wiser, and as society changes, you then say, how can I take something and make it healthier, even if it's something that we don't associate with health? I mean, pancakes, I don't associate with health, but can I make a healthier pancake? And the answer is, yes, you can. You know, you can make a healthier pancake. And that's why I like this recipe. I love pancakes. Do I eat them all the time? No, because if I ate them all the time, I'd weigh another 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I do like them, and I like them for Sunday treats. That's usually when we make pancakes at our house. So let's go into the recipe. So start out with a cup of whole wheat flour. Now, I have never... I don't think I've ever had a pancake that's made with whole wheat flour. That's one of the things you did to make it healthier?
Yes, and with the whole wheat flour, of course, you hear that things don't rise well because there's too much gluten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I then added the soy flour, which you will be getting to.
So we've got
because it has no gluten.
So soy flour, soy flour has no gluten, of course. So is that the thing that really keeps it from rising? Is a gluten issue with whole wheat? Of course. I'm just thinking through there. Well, I think it is because it may have more gluten in there. I think that we have listeners who actually are listening to the show who will send us emails and tell us why whole wheat flour does not rise as much as white flour. But so we've got a cup of whole wheat, a cup of all-purpose unbleached white flour, and a quarter of a cup of soy flour. Very interesting. How'd you come up with that? I mean,
through experimentation.
Through experimentation. I love it. I mean, I don't even have soy flour in my house. I'm going to have to get this. A tablespoonful of baking powder. Now, that is a critical ingredient, right? What if you leave that out? What happens?
Well, if you leave that out, you'll get flapjacks.
I always thought flapjacks and pancakes were exactly the same thing.
Oh, there is a difference.
There is a difference. So one is flatter than the other.
Yeah.
So that's
one doesn't have any leavening in it.
Uh-huh. Wow. Flapjacks. I never thought about it. I thought they were the same thing. Well, you know something? You learn something every day. Okay. 2 tablespoonfuls of brown sugar. It gives a good taste. 2 tablespoons of brown sugar. Teaspoon of salt. 1/4 cup of canola oil. So using a good oil to make your flapjacks or your pancakes, correct?
Yeah, and I wouldn't recommend like olive oil because olive oil has too much of its own flavor.
Right. I wouldn't do that either.
So canola oil is a nice, bland, neutral flavor.
Neutral. 2 eggs, large, medium, small?
I usually use a large.
2 large eggs. Enough milk to make a batter. What does that mean?
Well, I never actually measure the milk. I pour some in, and I always stir with a fork.
Mm-hmm.
I pour just enough in to make it real thick because I want to get the lumps out.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's really, really thick, it's thick enough that it's almost a dough.
Okay.
And that pulls the lumps apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just keep adding milk until I get the consistency that I want.
Uh-huh.
Now, I like a fairly thick batter because it makes the pancakes thicker.
Oh, so a thicker batter makes for a thicker pancake. So people can experiment with this. In other words,
about 3/4 cup of milk, something like that.
Okay. But I love experimentation. I mean, and public radio people love to experiment. Hands down, they are the experimenters of the world. So, so let's make it very simple. To combine the dry ingredients in a large bowl, add the milk to create a batter, just like you said, kind of almost like a bread dough batter that you then with a fork eventually makes so that it is a heavy batter and is not too thin. And cook. You make this on a griddle, an electric griddle, or you put the griddle on your stove?
Yes. Now, I actually had a metal disc that my mother used to make pancakes on, but you can't make them very big because it was, you know, it's just a metal disc. But you're absolutely right. If you put it on the stove with a cast iron griddle on the stove, you can get better, more even heat.
Uh-huh.
The problem is knowing just what to set the stove to get the right temperature.
That's the right temperature, yes. Well, you know what? That's why experiments will continue with flapjacks and pancakes. I love the recipe. Thank you so much. They're now Steve's famous pancakes, and we are going to make this viral.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Thanks a lot. Thanks so much for your help.
All right. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Steve gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's really easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can look at all of our other famous recipes, search our archives, and you can also download our podcast. Oh, and by the way, you can find us on Facebook. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
...800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Alexandria, Virginia. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I had a question about antihistamines and antacids.
Okay.
And I had had an incident several months back. It was a pretty scary experience. I started to eat my dinner, and I started to feel my throat constricting, and the muscles in my throat were sort of just moving up and down and doing really weird things. It was very uncomfortable. So I go to the hospital. They have no answers that night. I go to several doctors. So I go to an ENT, and the ENT says, you've got acid reflux. And I'm thinking, I'm a vegetarian. I eat healthy things. I don't eat chili dogs all day long. I can't possibly have acid reflux, which I learned to be not true. But I went to an allergist just to make sure I didn't have any allergies. I wasn't anaphylactic. I wasn't allergic to any of the foods that I was eating that night. I went to an endocrinologist. The medical student who was there declared that she did not want to be an allergist because they have to be paranoid from everything. And she actually looked up the foods that I was eating, which were...
That is very funny.
Yeah.
That is very funny. That's a medical joke. Doctors would get that, absolutely. It's very funny to be paranoid about everything.
Yeah, no, seriously, I really, it was, they were very vigilant, but, you know, made me a bit paranoid. But she had looked up the foods online while I was waiting to make sure that I didn't have any thyroid problems or anything like that. And she said the foods that you were eating were associated with acid reflux. So I went back to the ENT, who recommended that I take an antacid. None of them worked for me.
Uh-huh.
So she said you need to make sure that you take an antihistamine along with the antacid that you choose. I tried Zantac, which worked pretty well, but if I was taking it every day, it gave me an upset stomach because it was sort of like, you know, I only had acid problems sometimes, not all the time.
Let me tell you what I would do in a situation like this. First of all, you've gone to a lot of doctors. You've got a lot of advice.
Yeah.
You're right about paranoid allergists. I think they are. I think they can. I sometimes think that they can show that you're allergic to water and air. That's, you know, sometimes with those tests.
And exercise, if you could believe it. They were like, yeah, you could exercise too much and that could bring on a reaction. I was like, oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, I like that. She's not going to be an allergist because she'll be paranoid with everything. But let's talk about the episode and let's talk about the safety of the episode. One of the things you should do is get an EpiPen. An EpiPen is an adrenaline pen that you have with you. It's a self-injector in case you have an episode like this before. Put it in your, whatever you take with you, backpack, your purse, your Prada bag, whatever you happen to take with you. And just keep it with you so you don't have to be concerned about this one episode because you don't know what brought it on. So then in case it happens again and your throat feels like clothing, you give yourself a shot of this and you're okay, you know, and you deal with whether or not you have to go to the hospital. That's number one. Number two, we won't know what happened to you because you've gone to a number of physicians. Nobody can really tell whether or not it was something there or if it had anything whatsoever to do with what you're eating. You know, could have been something in the air. Who knows what it was? You may never, ever find out what it is. And I'm absolutely convinced that sometimes we don't know. And the reason is we can't test for it. I mean, the allergy testing is only so specific and so nonspecific that they say you're allergic to so many things that really don't bother you at all. So I wouldn't change my lifestyle at all. Now, you may have acid reflux. The drugs for acid reflux that work best are things such as over-the-counter Prilosec or Prevacid. Those are the two drugs that are OTC that work best. Zantac does work well, you know, 150 milligrams twice daily. What I might do if I were worried about acid reflux is take it every day for a month or two and see what it does. Do I feel better? And if I didn't make a difference, then I would only take it when I needed it. And I would stay away. I don't prescribe antacids except on an occasional basis anymore when people are in trouble because they don't work as well as H2 blockers such as Zantac or things called PPIs such as Prilosec or Prevacid. Okay? Stop going to doctors.
I will stop going to doctors. One question about the antihistamine. Both of them, the ENT and the allergist, really thought the antihistamine was going to open my airways. It really just drives me up because I have no allergies.
Yeah, I mean, and also this is one episode. You know, so they want to put you on an antihistamine every day for one episode. We don't know what brought it on. I wouldn't take a daily pill every day. Now, Once again, I would have the EpiPen with me, and if you want to have an antihistamine with you, you buy one of these little pill things that you can attach to your car keys, and then you'll have an antihistamine in case you need it. And I would probably use Zyrtec. It makes you a little makes me a little sleepy, but it's a more potent antihistamine. Or I would take Allegra, which is now over the counter, and if I took Claritin, I would double the dose. But I would take it with me. I wouldn't take it every day. I'm against daily pills unless you need them, and so are you. So are most people.
Yeah.
So, but you don't need to see any more doctors right now. You've got enough information, and we don't know what happened.
Okay. I can live with that.
Keep exercising, go out to eat, and have a great day.
All right. That sounds awesome.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
We appreciate the call. Before we take a short break here, Zorba, let's log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out Heather in Jacksonville, Florida. Heather's hoping you can take a stroll down Advice Memory Lane. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I was explaining an issue to a co-worker that I'm having, and he said there was a man on your show that called in with the same problem. The first thing I eat every day gives me such intestinal cramps, they are comparable to labor pains. This only lasts about 10 to 15 minutes. Do you remember the caller and your solution?"
Not at all. I don't remember the caller or the solution. I'm just racking my brain. My hard disk is whirling about. I'm even looking for random access to try to find it, and I cannot remember that at all. And I'm not sure what advice I would give. I would probably say change the food and see if it works. But your question is, do I remember the caller? And the answer is no.
So for intestinal cramps comparable to labor pains,
I need to have a little bit more data to be able to answer the question. Yeah. Labor pains are, I've never had labor, but they're pretty strong. So call up on the show and I'll give you an answer.
If you need a recap on some advice or just want to test Zorba's memory, send your lifestyle questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have another interesting topic to talk over. That'll be coming up next. More of your calls, of course. Our medical myth buster a little later on. Stick with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, Zorba, some really interesting new information on the harms of prostate cancer screening.
That's right. I want to give a little bit of history about cancer screening. We know that mammography is worthwhile for women between the ages of 50 and 70. Mm-hmm. Over the age of 70, it's never been proven to be worthwhile. A lot of cancer over 70, never been proven to be worthwhile. Colon cancer screening, we know, is useful for people over 50, younger people, for some people, if they have a family history. We know that's useful all the way throughout. The number one cancer killer, lung cancer, we don't screen for because chest x-rays are worthless. Mm-hmm. The feds have looked at prostate cancer, and they've given it a D recommendation, which is flunking. Yeah. They've said the harm is not worth the risk. Now, they have followed people 15 years out, and here's what they found.
Yeah.
Men who get screened, some of them are, there's less prostate cancer in men who get screened and then get treated for prostate cancer, get their prostate removed or radiation. But there's no difference in the death rates. In other words, when you look at the men who have their prostate removed and the men who don't, they die from something. The ones who get their prostate removed either die of complications of the surgery or they die of heart attacks or strokes, but there's no difference in the death rate.
We should emphasize the complications of surgery because those are significant.
They're significant. Now, every urologist says, well, in my hands, the complications complications are less. Well, it ain't the truth, because if you add them all together, the complications are there. Some urologists are better than others. Some centers are better than others. And I do believe they have better numbers. But if they do it long enough, they're going to get people who have dribbling, people who have erectile dysfunction, people who die from the surgery. And the feds looked at this from a population point of view. The good, you know, the good surgeons and the surgeons that aren't as good had said, we should stop screening. Now, guess who got upset with this?
Well, of course, the surgeons and the urologists.
The urologists got upset with this. Of course, you know, when PSA came out, I said that's the full Urologist Employment Act. And the Cancer Societies got upset because, among other things, they have a vested interest. Yeah. Now, their heart's in the right place, but they have a vested interest.
Yeah, but aren't there some prostate cancers that grow more quickly than others?
Yes, and the problem is we don't know which ones they are. That's the whole problem. We know with a prostate cancer in a young man who's 50 years of age is more likely to be problematic than for somebody who's 90.
The surgeons say this is going to take us back to the dark ages when prostate cancer deaths were more numerous.
Well, that may not be true. We may have less prostate cancer deaths today because simply we're eating different in a different way and we don't know what causes prostate cancer. You know, there's been a drop in it, and the surgeons want to claim it's because of the surgery, but the statistician said we're not really sure. The real issue is this is an individual decision between you and your doctor. Follow the advice, but make the decision that's right for you.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And our next caller, Zorba, is in Traverse City, Michigan. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Oh, I called because I have a problem with leg pain and leg swelling. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis about 21 years ago. And at that time, my legs, I didn't have any feeling in my legs. Mm. And when I walked around, I looked like Frankenstein.
Oh, wow.
And kind of an interesting experience. But since then, I've gotten the feeling back in my legs. But I see people that have leg problems and swelling, and I don't know that this is necessarily related to multiple sclerosis or not. And I was wondering what your thoughts were.
Yeah, now, just so we have a clear picture, this current leg swelling has been going on for how long?
It's been going on for a couple of years, about 3 or 4 years.
But there was a long period, when you didn't have any leg problems, and then this started up. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, if it were related to MS, I would expect when you had the diagnosis of MS, you would have it. And a lot of people with MS don't have leg swelling. You didn't have it until a couple of years ago. So you have to look for other causes of the leg swelling. Have you brought it up to your doctor at all?
I did. I have.
And what did your doctor say?
And they sent me to the vein specialist to have that checked out, and that checked out clean. I don't have problems with that.
Uh-huh. What's your height? What's your weight?
I am 5'11" and I weigh 250 pounds. I did weigh 280, but I've just lost 30 pounds.
Congratulations! Yeah. Congratulations! What did that do anything for your swelling? By the way,
not a thing.
Uh-huh. How much do you walk?
Well, not very much. It's very difficult to walk. But I exercise, I swim, and when I can, I exercycle, but I find that sometimes I can and sometimes I can't.
Quite often, the way blood gets back to our heart goes from the heart pushes it out, and the arterioles and the arteries have little muscular area in them, so they help push the blood in, they help pump it into our bodies. But when blood comes back to the heart through the veins, the only way it works there is when we actually have muscles around those veins pushing them. And the problem is, the less you walk, the more likely your leg is to swell. I mean, that's the bottom line now that you've been checked out. So there are a couple of things you can do. You can try a compression stocking. You can buy an over-the-counter TEDS, T-E-D-S, stockings. They have them in pharmacies all over the country. Or you can get a Jobst, J-O-B-S-T, and there's some other brands too that are really a lot better compression stockings. And sometimes, if you wear a compression stocking for 3 to 4 weeks, your veins just stop swelling up as much. And I have people then who only have to wear the compression stocking once or twice a week, and they're able to go without it, and their legs don't swell. And that's what I would recommend. I think it's from lack of activity in your lower leg that would do it. The other thing that your doc would know more about is whether or not you need to be on a diuretic, because sometimes diuretics will also help.
Wow. Tremendous.
Well, that's a good response. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Sure, we appreciate the
My
call.
My pleasure.
And I assume we're going to put that info on compression stockings on the Facebook.
Absolutely.
And the website.
We'll put it on our website and on our Facebook. We'll put all that information on there for you. Well, thank you. And thank you so much for the compliment.
Yeah. Time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with midnight snacking. It's long been thought that there is a connection between late night snacking and weight gain. Is this true?
No, it's not. It's calories in, calories out, calories in, calories out. If you're a late night snacker and you're eating too many calories over a 24-hour period, yes, you're going to gain weight. But the reality is you're going to gain the weight if you eat those extra calories at breakfast, if you eat them at lunch, if you eat them 3 o'clock in the afternoon or at 7 o'clock in the evening. It's not that the food just is in your stomach and you don't kind of work it out. It's that you're eating too much food and you're not working out enough. That's ultimately what that is.
It's funny that this myth even exists because you've talked about this a number of times.
Yes.
And everybody should have heard you talk about this by now.
No, that's it. I mean, I should get – I mean, come on. Come on. You know, we have millions of people who listen to the show. And, I mean, come on, people. Just listen and do that. Late night snacking doesn't ruin your body. It's snacking that sometimes will be really the culprit. And it doesn't matter when you eat it.
No matter the time, you can send in your myth for us to bust. Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
A listener with us now, Zorba in Vernal, Utah. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Okay, well, I have an 8-year-old daughter who has really bad gas, and then you can smell it in her breath, and it smells like something's rotting inside of her.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So her breath smells sulfury and her gas, and she has gas. Wow.
She's already had her tonsils out, so that you know that.
Right. Well, it's important because sometimes if people have bad breath, it's teeth, tonsils, you know, sinus infections. How are her teeth? She doesn't have – her teeth are okay or
– They keep up on her teeth, and she's doing really good there.
Okay. So her teeth are okay. She blows wind? That's what you're talking about with gas? Farts?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny how that's a vulgar term, but gas is vulgar. In our society, it's a vulgar, you know, it's a vulgar issue. What does she have for breakfast?
Depends on the day. Mm-hmm. She is a soy milk baby. She's never had milk. She's always had soy milk. She's always had soy formula. So, like, if she has cereal, it's soy. If she has eggs or bacon or something, you know, like that, if we do something strange, cooked breakfast, then just bacon or sausage or, you know, pancake.
Fiber? Does she eat any fiber-filled foods at all?
Not really. I mean, we try to eat really healthy.
But I would try that out. I would add some fiber to the diet. I mean, clearly she's got something going on intestinally. First of all, what I think you ought to do is ritualize her breakfast, and it should be a fiber-filled cereal. Find out what she likes. Kids often will eat Raisin Bran. They'll often eat it. Raisin Bran is a great cereal. Give her some Raisin Bran in the morning at least once a day with the soy milk that you're giving her. Make sure she gets a fiber-filled cereal. Very important, once a day. Make it, you know, a good bowl of Raisin Bran. I think that'll help. Accenting fruits and vegetables that will, you know, that are non-constipating, getting rid of the banana, good idea to do it at that end. The other thing is, I think you may have to give her some extra help for a regular bowel movement. And in order to do that, you can, once again, Miralax, which is what I think is really, really good because it's non-habit forming, half a container full. They have it's a powder and you mix it, and the powder, I believe it's 7 grams, but you mix it with this cap. And basically what I would give her is I would give her half the normal dose for an adult, and I would motivate her to have a regular bowel movement every day. And the way I would motivate her colon to do that is with Miralax. And kids will often tolerate it because it doesn't have much of a taste. She needs to have a regular daily bowel movement, and she needs to have more fiber in her diet, and that's probably going to reduce the gas. The gas, I really think, is from the bacteria in her colon that are really fermenting more because she's not having some regular bowel movements. That's what I would look at.
Okay.
Okay. It's tough. It's tough with kids, but it's really a matter of getting them on the side with you. Have her go shopping with you at the store, pick out 2 or 3 cereals, you know, small little things of cereal, and then have her choose which one. You've got to get her to buy into it. Otherwise, she's not going to take the cereal in the morning. So.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, thank you.
Well,
thanks for the call. And before we get out of here for the week, Zorba, let's get your official Judge Zorba gavel, because you have another case to settle.
Okay, and I've got the gavel right here. I've got the gavel. Gavel's a gift. I mean, you can't settle a case without a gavel.
Okay, today's case comes to us from proud soccer parent Gary in Traverse City, Michigan. Gary writes, I have a 15-year-old elite-level soccer player, and he and his 18 teammates are headed into some intense tournament play this summer. All of them and their coach are convinced that their hydration needs should be satisfied by Gatorade. I am not convinced and believe that they need to drink more water, a lot more water. I recognize that the electrolytes added to Gatorade are probably beneficial, but with that comes various sugars, flavors, colors, and additives that must be processed by their bodies. With straight water, your body can absorb and use it immediately. Can you help us set the record straight? Is water better than Gatorade to replenish a body's needs?
It's a great question, and I'll tell you why. Water and Gatorade are both going to replenish your body's needs. I mean, most of what Gatorade is water. I mean, that's what it is. It's water with stuff in it. Some potassium, that's really what it has in there that kids often need a little bit. You know, some sodium, and they've got a good selling campaign. Let's use Gatorade instead of water. Either one is probably going to work. Do you need the sodium? Do you need the potassium? Is it going to make you better? Do you need the sugar? Because you're exercising. I think the bottom line is you got to test it and see exactly, you know, whether or not you like it. I don't think Gatorade is a fabulous product. If you want to totally replenish electrolytes, you go to something like Pedialyte, which does a much better job than Gatorade. And Gatorade has too much sugar in it. And, of course, it has all the other junk that's also in there. So my answer is water.
Oh. But water's not as much fun to dump on the coach after a victory. You want to have the color. If you need Judge Zorba to settle your lifestyle case or just to coach your soccer team, send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And if I become your soccer coach, your team is guaranteed to lose.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Or on Facebook.
That's right. We're there for you, and you can follow us on Twitter, too.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Fonzie Friedrich is our executive producer, who gets help from technical director Brad Potsy Colbert. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. You notice Adam writes these. He always gets the good character of the two characters.
And you know why? Because he's the Fonz.
Yeah. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company here on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0526Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.